Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast featuring Phil A. Perry. And as always, we are joined by the quarterback, Matt Cassel. We got a ton to get to in this program. First up, Miami Dolphins. They are up this week. Are they in a place the Patriots want to be? And I'm not talking geographically. If they are, how do the Patriots get where Miami is? What's the road ahead for two Patriots icons? We'll take another bite at the N'Keal Harry apple this week. Bruce Arians defends Tom Brady, and there's a football game to break down. All that and more on your Tom Curran podcast. Matt Vinatieri, move
to the 40, Patriots time, world champion, and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
All right, boys, you hear it. It's a full menu we got, so let's just dispense with the niceties, shall we?
We shall. Let's go.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that.
Miami right now, they are on the cusp of the playoffs. They are in the last playoff position at number 7. They have a starting quarterback that they drafted 5th overall, who's got 9 touchdowns and 1 pick and Tua Tagovailoa. They have a culture in place. They did some great shopping on the free agent market. They are heading in the right direction by all accounts. Now, forget about how long it took them to get there. No one cares. No one cares relative to this conversation where the Patriots have been and what they've done over the last 20 years. The bottom line is, if you're a Patriots fan, you want to know, okay, how long am I going to be in purgatory? And do I do what the Miami Dolphins did to get out? Do you fellas agree that the Dolphins are where the Patriots want to be, regardless of how they went about getting there? Phil, Matt, take the baton, either one of you.
I mean, I believe they are just based surely on the roster and what they did this offseason. They went out, they spent money in free agency. They got Byron Jones in the secondary, Van Noy, and they also secured that offensive line. They drafted well. They have the first rounder that they drafted at the right tackle. They added depth there. They went out, they spent money at the running back position. Obviously, Tua coming in, being the face of the franchise moving forward. So they've got a young, established quarterback now that's going to continue to grow within this system. Their defense is playing well. They added those pieces in the secondary that they needed, mm-hmm. and also added depth in the front with Shaq Lawson and those guys. So, I mean, they've got a good group, and they've got a good core now moving forward. Their young group as well, which is, you know, exciting for that fan base, I would think. And when you look at the Patriots roster, yes, there's a lot of, you know, uncertainties with these young guys and how they're going to play. Are they going to develop the way that they want? But at the same time, if you look at the holes in this roster for the Patriots, particularly the weapons on the outside, the wide receiver position, the tight end position, I think their offensive line mm-hmm. is as solid as anybody in the league, including their running back position. But there's a lot of question marks on the offensive side of the ball. And to get to where Miami is, I'm sure Miami's looking at it. And if you look at it just in its entirety, you're saying they're in a better position right now.
There's no doubt about it. I think there are a lot of teams in the NFL that are looking at Miami right now and say, man, I wish we could get there. Not only because of what they've done over the course of the last 12 months to make their team better, but because of moving forward, they have 2 first round picks and 2 second round picks in this upcoming draft. And so they are set up to try to sustain this. I think when you look at what they have right now, what's been most interesting to me is that they really went from 0. I mean, they were at the bottom of the barrel outside of having Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki, and Xavien Howard, right? Those are 3 yep. important players to them that were with the team when they were at their lowest point.
Adam Gase point.
Outside of those guys, I mean, they have essentially started over. And they have gotten better, Tom, from last year to this year, mostly via their defense, which is surprising in an offensive game now. But that's where they spent the bulk of their free agent money, and they invested young players on offense, and they're still waiting for a lot of those young players to hit. They're playing now, but they're not the ones that are really sparking this turnaround that we've seen from last year to this year. They're sort of keeping it on the straight and narrow, but Tua Tagovailoa is not driving this thing right now, no. right? This offensive line is not driving this thing.
Sometimes, but so here's the thing. Miami had to crater. And we all know it. And you pointed it out, Phil. They were devoid of talent. They went from Adam Gase to Brian Flores. They traded away Minka Fitzpatrick. They traded away Laremy Tunsil. They took, so that's taking first round pick, top 10 talent, talent wise. I can't remember when Tunsil went, but and shipping it out to get stuff back, regardless of what they did with it. So Miami embraced the suck. And they seemingly were prepared to be a bad football team last year. God bless them after the 43-0 Patriots blowout in week two. They rectified things and was even worse the first week against Baltimore somehow of 2019. But they embraced the suck in a way that not a lot of teams can do. Certainly the Patriots, I don't think anybody, because of Bill Belichick, who he is and how he runs things, expect the Patriots to be in a position where they can embrace the suck or will have to the same way. But additionally, to get that bad, to get the Tua pick, to get a top five pick, to maximize your darts to throw, you have to trade people away.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Can the Patriots get out? Have the Patriots cratered yet? Phil, I want you to go with this. Are they out? Are they at their nadir? And how do they get out?
They should be. They don't have to be worse.
This is the bottom yet. Okay.
They don't have to be worse than this next year. They shouldn't be, I would argue, be worse than this next year. And they don't have to get as bad as the Dolphins did to get to where the Dolphins are. The Patriots have plenty of cap dollars to spend. I know they have a lot of free agents leaving. Luckily for them, most of those spots were spots that were going to be replaced anyway, i.e. quarterback. And the others are at positions that, relative to other spots, aren't necessarily expensive positions to fill. You're talking about defensive tackle. You're talking about center. You know, those are key guys, Lawrence Guy and David Andrews, that are about to hit free agency. But you can either keep them around at a relatively low cost, or you can find somebody else that can fill in and give you starting caliber play, you would think. Mm-hmm. They don't have to crater. Matt, to me, they have enough in terms of free agent dollars. They have almost $60 million in cap space. The Dolphins had $80 million last year, which was obscene. The Patriots have $60. That's enough for them to buy a receiver, maybe buy two. And all of a sudden—
And additionally, that's even with the dropped cap to $175. The cap may stay stagnant. I'm just throwing this in there. May stay stagnant about $195, Mike Florio wrote. So there's a lot of— But that'll be a big deal if they can get that extra cap dealt.
It would be. And to me, Matt, they also have six picks in the first four rounds. And that really, between those free agent dollars and the draft picks, you have to hit. You just have to be right. And if you are, and you're right at the right positions, i.e. quarterback, you could be competitive next year. You can be a Super Bowl team next year. No, but you can be competitive. You can be what the Dolphins are this year, I think.
Right. And you look at them though, they've been pretty competitive throughout the year. Look, and they've been blown out at certain points in the year, whether it was the 49er games or last week against the Rams. But at the end of the day, this is still a competitive football team, but they do have holes, right? You can go out in free agency this year. Look, the free agency class for the wide receiver position, whether it's Marvin Jones, Allen Robinson, you can go up and down the list, AJ Green. There's a ton of free agencies, veteran guys that are probably going to be willing to come here. The big question mark is the quarterback position. Now, is it in the draft? You have to hit on the quarterback position, because I don't think Cam coming back is going to help resurrect this team, right? They're going to have to move forward, find the right guy, whether it's a veteran guy, which I don't think there's a great options out there in terms of free agency quarterbacks.
Well, Matt Castle.
Hey, Matt Castle. Yeah, they could have picked me up this year, but they never gave me a call. But I was ready to rock and roll nonetheless. But in terms of like just the wide receiver position, you got to address that tight end position. What are those young guys going to do? Are we ever going to see any development out of these young tight ends that they drafted this year? Or do you go out and get a guy like Hunter Henry or somebody like that? That's another free agency another free agent this year. So, I mean, there's options out there. And then, like you said, plugging in those holes, whether it's the defensive line, you saw it with like Danny Shelton, a guy that you can come in, put in there. He's a run stopper. That's what they're lacking right now, is that big presence in the middle. And they brought Bo Allen in this year to be that guy, but he's been on IR all year. So again, an injury that was sustained early on, it didn't help them. But at the same time, they had got that same guy to replace Danny Shelton. That would have been a big lift for this defensive unit. They can go out and spend a lot of money in free agency, but at the same time, they just need to fill those holes and get some weapons there on the offensive side of the ball.
This is where my concern is. We don't yet know how many holes they actually have. And that's why I'm a little bit of a, I'm either a Pollyanna or a Cassandra. I'm either the guy who's making too big a deal out of something and everything's a disaster, or I'm telling stuff, I'm a truth teller and no one's buying it. The Patriots have these free agents on their own team that are core players with that $60 million in cap space. David Andrews, Joe Tooney, James White, Rex Burkhead, Lawrence Guy, Adam Butler, Jason McCourty. They also have Stephon Gilmore, who's going to want a significant raise. He might end up being someplace else, so you've lost your number one corner. I think I'm missing some other guys, but the bottom line is Julian Edelman's 34, Devin McCourty's 30-plus, Dante Hightower might not come back. We'll see about that. Patrick Chung is 30-plus. These are your core guys. And I know that some of the guys I just mentioned weren't here, but J.C. Jackson has to play balls out if he is ascending. I don't know who your interior defensive lineman is. I'm sure they'll re-sign one of those guys. They still don't have an edge rusher. They might lose their center. They might lose their guard. Isaiah Wynn, I like him. Michael Onwenu's got things fixed. What I'm driving at is you have all these holes that haven't yet revealed themselves and the holes that you already have. That's why when Phil and I got into this yesterday, he's like, hey, they're a quarterback away from being back in business, 8-8, 10-6. That's a fair assessment of what you were driving
at. Yeah, if they hit on the quarterback, I really don't think it's asking too much of them, even given those positions that they lose there, to say they should be in the mix for the division again next year. Like, Buffalo's good, and so
I
maybe
think that,
like,
I think
they
gonna
should
be
where the
eight.
Dolphins are.
Okay, and that's fair, and I just think that they might be an 8-8, 6-10. We might be heading for 6-10 to 8-8, 9-7 for a while. I don't know when the next time we'll see double digit wins. And it's the quarterback, you say. I say there's other stuff in the house that needs to be replaced as well.
I would just say, and Matt, I would love to get your insight on this, because to me, and this might just be me looking at too many numbers and not being in the game enough as you have been for so long. I look at it and I say, if you can get competent quarterback play, doesn't have to be amazing. If you get competent quarterback play and two capable pass catchers on top of what you've had this year, so you need more there for sure, I think you can compete. And that's just me looking at it and saying, I don't think anybody would say this Patriots defense has been lights out this year. You know, they're a top 10 scoring defense this season. They're about on pace for about, I think, over 10 years in a row, they're going to be a top 10 scoring defense. So pass rusher, interior lineman, like,
that's all.
I'm not worried about that stuff. I'm more worried about getting a receiver and getting a quarterback. And I think that could make
that's
the team
where your
a lot
kick-ass
better.
Coaching staff comes in. Sorry, Matt, he's going to you, but that is why they don't go to 3-13. That's just kick-ass coaching staff, Matt. Sorry, go.
That's exactly right. I mean, defensively, they'll always figure out a scheme, right? You have Bill Belichick, the best defensive mind, best coach in the league, and maybe in the history of the league, and he's going to be able to figure it out defensively, and he's going to be able to find guys to plug into those roles that they need. Like you said, this is a quarterback-driven league. You have to be able to have a competent quarterback that goes out there and perform, not just a competent quarterback that can go out there and perform and make the throws and do that. You have to surround him with enough weapons, because, again, if you're a stagnant offense, which we've seen throughout the course of this year, the system has changed dramatically. They're in 21 personnel trying to run the ball downhill. You got two-man patterns. And a lot of times, versus good man-to-man defenses, you can't do that. They can stack the box. They have to figure out a way to get diverse. A guy that's capable, but at the same time, put guys around him where you can create those mismatches. And it's, I'd say it week in and week out, this is one of those one-on-one when you can go outside and say, oh man, I got a guy that can go win one-on-one. It's a matchup driven league, and they haven't been able to create those mismatches this year, whether it's through empty formation or enough guys on the field that they feel are capable to go out and win. And so they've just kind of been handcuffed in terms of what they can call, what they can do, and they try to stick to their strength. But if they can have some more diversity with the guys and the skill players around them, with a good quarterback or a competent quarterback, Josh McDaniels will figure it out. Look, who knew that, and I'm not toting my own horn, but let's be 2008. I hadn't started a game since college. Okay. And I had a horrible preseason. You guys were probably all sitting there going, oh my God, this guy's awful. What are we going to do at the quarterback position? I didn't have a good preseason, but you know, the fact of the matter is Josh put me in a good position, let me grow in the system a little bit. And I understood the system. I was with it for 4 years and was able to become comfortable. If he can do that with me, he can definitely do that with a bunch of guys out there that are capable or more capable and more skilled than I am.
Can I point to two teams that I think are good examples of how the Patriots could try to build? And because I think the Dolphins one, they've done it in such a way where they really loaded up on defense and they got the top five quarterback. It's hard to picture the Patriots doing something really similar. I look at Tennessee, where Matt is right now, and I look at Cleveland, where neither of those defenses are very good. I mean, the Patriots right now, significantly better in terms of points allowed. Tennessee is, I think, 21st. The Browns are 27th in scoring defense this year. But what do they have? They both have really good running games. The Patriots this year have actually had a better running game in terms of overall efficiency, EPA, success rate, that sort of thing. So they both, the Patriots already kind of have that. Now, where both teams outclass the Patriots at the quarterback position, though Baker Mayfield has been kind of a middle of the road guy, and Ryan Tannehill was somebody nobody wanted 2 years ago. And they have legitimate weapons to catch passes, though not like out of this world weapons. AJ Brown, they hit on a second round pick. He's a legit number one. Odell Beckham is not playing there right now, but Jarvis Landry, you could say for a lot of teams, would be a number one.
And they hit on Njoku to throw in their tight ends as well.
Yeah, the tight ends. The tight ends have been helpful for both teams for sure. But I don't think any of those guys, Jonnu Smith included, those guys aren't like Pro Bowl guys. Those are just like starting tight ends.
And you're talking about Ryan Tannehill and Baker Mayfield.
Right.
Unattainable, but Tannehill certainly is not the level of quarterback that is unattainable.
But neither is Baker Mayfield. Like, he was drafted number one. But you should be able to find somebody of that caliber.
Right. But you can't go to number one and say, we got our pick of the litter here.
But I'm saying there are Baker Mayfields out there. You know,
but even if you have the number one overall pick, that's no guarantee that you're going to get a guy who can send you, regardless of your coaching staff, into the elite. It's a great conversation.
He was taken one overall, but he's not a number one.
Yeah. Right, what I'm saying is you're going to have to shop in a different store than the Cleveland Browns were able to. I like Baltimore as a comp. They rebuild like that. Embrace who you are. You're halfway there. Right, Matt? You're halfway there.
Well, that's what they – I mean, the Baltimore situation, though, is different because they were
a better thrower.
Right. I mean, a better thrower. At the same time, they had put that system in place before they drafted him. They said, look, if we're going to make a commitment to him, Harbaugh said, we got to get Greg Roman to have a plan in place. So when it is time for Lamar Jackson to step in there, we know what kind of offense we want to be.
He watched a year, right?
Huh?
He watched most of his first year.
He went in late his rookie year.
And he said, and that's kind of funny, Matt. I'm sorry. But that's kind of a model because, you know, Patriots can look at Cam right now and go, find their quarterback, even if Cam's the guy or Jacoby Brissett or whoever, bring him back next year. I know. And then say, okay, we can start to build. But they've got something in place, Matty. You're right.
It was the same thing, though, with Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? Tua just took over. He's been playing for, four games now? And Ryan Fitzpatrick was able to hold down the fort. He was able to actually, if you look at their stats in the categories, they actually were playing better with Ryan Fitzpatrick in there because of the confidence level. You know, he understood Chan Gailey's system, all that stuff. And now Tua's taking over, and he's done really well. And like you said, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception. He take care of the ball. He's getting better week in and week out. But at the same time, if you have a bridge guy with a young guy that can come in and just develop and understand the system slowly and then get put into that situation where he can be successful. But again, they have guys there, Devontae Parker, Preston Williams. I know that Preston's out right now. Mike Gesicki, they went and committed to spend some money at the running back position. So, and they bolstered their offensive line. And again, they're not winning a lot of games just because of their offense. It's their defensive side of the ball. Brian Flores, what he's able to do, the structure. And that's the same approach that I would say. You look at the New England Patriots, they can win ball games with defense. They obviously are missing a few pieces of the puzzle, but now you go in and you have at least an adequate offensive unit that can go and score more points. I mean, they're in the bottom part of the league in every statistical category. Mm-hmm. The New England Patriots are other than rushing. But if you go out and get a quarterback that can throw the ball a little bit and have a decent passing game, you're going to win more ball games right off the bat.
That's why Bill is so good at building a team. He might swing and miss a million times in the draft and free agency, but he is going to say, okay, these are the guys I have. What direction do I go? Instead of saying, okay, this is my system. Who do I bring in to fit it? That takes out a little bit of the cratering possibility. So they do have parts in place. You got a running game. You have an offensive line. You found David Andrews as an undrafted guy, and you found Joe Tooney in the third round. As much as I've made a big deal about those guys, you could probably do that again. Lawrence Guyon was a free agent, mid to lower tier. Adam Butler was undrafted. J.C. Jackson, undrafted. So some of these guys you can find again. Bottom line, though, Matt, and I want to segue now because these two guys, I believe, are emblematic of the Patriots as they move along, if they embrace a different kind of style, they will have to say goodbye to some guys or move on from their usefulness. And as Julian Edelman returns to practice this week from his knee injury with just three games left, kind of just a noble warrior coming back when he could, you know, I suppose bail at 34 and say, I'll come back next year. And James White is having a down year and cannot find any kind of kismet with Cam because of Cam's limitations. Are we maybe seeing the final days of Julian and James White because of maybe scheme altering age and all those things? And should they be a part of things going forward, Matt?
Well, I think that you always have to understand in the locker room, it's really important to have those veteran guys that are there, have presence. They might not be what they were before, but even when I came in, right, the Kevin Fox of the world, the Teddy Bruschi's of the world that are integral parts of that locker room and building that environment, that culture that Bill Belichick speaks about, and they hold people accountable. And having guys like that in on the offensive side of the ball that have won championships, that understand what it takes to be successful, it's really important. And I know that James White isn't having a great year, and most of that becomes he doesn't fit the style of play that they're running right now. But can they get back to that? Absolutely. You look at Kevin Falk, I mean, he's a guy that continued to be an integral part of the system and what we did in our success because of what he could do. And I think James White, if they got back to that type of offense, could still be very effective. I don't think it's just playing out. He can't play anymore.
I agree.
And his skill set, they just don't utilize him, right?
He's like, they're going away from that. If they want to embrace a new kind of quarterback, are the slot and the third down back, perhaps, Matt, and then Philly jump in after, is could this vital position for the last two decades go the way of the dodo?
I just don't see them continuing on this trend of just being a 21 personnel, get Big 12. Now, they'll utilize that at times because of that. That's maybe one of their strengths, and they're a game plan team. But Julian Edelman, you know, I think part of this is him coming back and showing that he's still healthy and can still do it. And if he can show and prove over the next few weeks that he's still a guy that can go out and perform, even with all the injuries that he sustained, look, bring me back and give me another opportunity. And then as we start to evolve in this offensive unit, get the right guys in place, now he's a huge asset. I mean, if he can go out and work the slot, having a slot receiver that's a capable guy that can go win within that 10-yard range, give you those easy throws, which they haven't done much of this year, that's a huge part of it. Not only that, but he can mentor the next guy and the young guys that they bring in. I mean, that's a big part of that process as well.
Yeah, I would say that's sort of the danger of making this shift full time would be what we're seeing now for the Patriots, no doubt, but what we're seeing from the Ravens too, which is when you have to spread it out and it's third and long or you're down on the scoreboard and you need three receivers on the field, what do you do then? Because can the quarterback make the accurate throw in a critical situation when he needs it? Does he have the help on the outside that he needs to be able to make that throw? So I think the Patriots are going to want to be able to, I think they, you know, having the idea of a mobile quarterback is nice, right? Just having that option is great. I don't know if it makes sense to continue to have it be the focus of your offense. And so what does that mean for Edelman and White? I think both those guys could still have roles here in New England. I mean, in most offenses, the third down back is still a thing. And James White is a guy that I would want around if I'm the Patriots, no doubt about it. And I think the thing that with those two teams that I mentioned, you know, the Titans and the Browns, one other thing that both those teams have that the Patriots do have right now, but we're not sure if they'll have it next year, are good play callers, creative offensive minds that are willing to be versatile, that are willing to use different personnel packages to be able to attack, as Matt mentioned, on a week-to-week basis, depending on the team you're playing.
Hey, before we move on, you understand that we are affiliated here with NBC and the Golf Channel. We got so much golf coverage. I like golf. You like golf. Wanted to let you know that the PNC Championship is this weekend. It's going to be a family affair, okay? Players will be playing with family members, like Tiger Woods playing with his son, Charlie. Wait till you see the two swings. Mirror images. Coverage begins Saturday on Peacock and NBC. Don't miss it. I want to get to two other items I had mentioned at the top before we get to the Miami game. First, N'Keal Harry and the footwork king, Rashad Whitfield, who is seemingly a talented coach of receivers and defensive backs on being expert with moving their feet quickly, worked with N'Keal Harry this past offseason. He was contacted by Henry McKenna from USA Today. And the two talked about how N'Keal Harry's season has gone. Long story short, the footwork king said Cam Newton could be better. And as a result, Harry's game has suffered. Didn't say anything that wasn't accurate. Just tried to walk it back. But what I found most interesting was, because I don't care about the he said, she said, and the footwork king tried to say that I didn't say that. And Henry, of course, is not going to make it up because that's not good for business at all. But here's what the footwork king had to say when he was on with Mike Menansky on WEEI Mutt at Night.
It sounds like you think that last year the confidence was an issue and that he read into, you know, some of those things where, hey, Tom's not throwing to the young receivers. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, and that's the biggest thing, biggest jump from college to NFL. I was like, all right, everybody's great here now. You know what I mean? So the things that you did in college don't necessarily work in the NFL. You know, these guys are a lot more skilled, good football IQ. I mean, they understand, okay, N'Keal, you're lined up right here. All right, it's third and whatever. They know the down and distance. They know the quarterback they're playing against. They know the offensive coordinator. So N'Keal can run a route and so-and-so can be sitting on it, you know. Plus, for the DBs I trained, N'Keal played against this year, which he did good against, you know, Xavier Howard. He did really good against a lot of the defensive in the back that I train out here every year. So, you know, it was really good competition watching those guys go at it. But his confidence got better and better and better each and every game. You know, I know he had a game against the Broncos where he slipped out of that break, which probably would have either been a touchdown or put him in field goal range to win that game, I believe.
Fourth down, yep.
I caught a bunch of heat for that, which I always do with all my athletes, you know. I think he's been in the right mental state, and I'm hoping that he comes back next year, depending on what they do, you know. But I think he'll come back next year. And when we work this offseason, the number one thing I'm telling N'Keal this year is this offseason, N'Keal, 2021, you need to play angry. Play angry, like a Dez Bryant. Angry. I want you at the football thrown to you, attack it. When you're running your routes, attack the defender. If there's somebody that wants to talk to you, attack them. Man, run through them. Play that game with that kind of emotion, Nick. And that's what's going to set him apart. Because he has all the gifts. He has all the skills. It's just that part there, you know. And he's going to definitely do that.
All right, so that's the footwork king. And look, he's not a media mogul. And maybe he's not as – it's probably a more of a quid pro quo media situation that he's accustomed to, where I'm going to say some things and people are going to cover up what I say just so I can give him some information and get some quotes. Henry did what he's supposed to do. Dig it. And he dug it. But the bottom line is, Phil, when we hear that, you actually mentioned this. Be who you are, N'Keal Harry. Be Dez Bryant. Don't try and be CeeDee Lamb. Don't try and be Jerry Jeudy. Don't try and be Henry Ruggs. Correct?
Yeah, that was what was, the Cam comments aside, that was what was the most surprising thing to me about that story that Henry wrote, was that N'Keal Harry's footwork coach, offseason trainer, is saying that we need to get him quicker. And I'm sure that is something that you can improve to a certain extent, but N'Keal Harry's never going to be Keenan Allen or Julian Edelman. Like, N'Keal Harry's 230 pounds almost coming out of the draft. He's a big man. He was being compared to Dez Bryant and Josh Gordon and Anquan Boldin, you know, coming out of Arizona State. Those were sort of his height, weight, speed comps. And obviously he hasn't reached nearly those levels, Matt, when we mentioned those players.
He's Laquan Treadwell.
He's much closer to Laquan Treadwell than any of those guys. But that to me makes much more sense, what he said on WEI, that we just got to get him to play physical. Because the plays he's made this year, the most impressive plays have just been when he has out-muscled guys or jumped over them to pluck footballs off the tops of their helmets. Like, we've seen a couple of those, and that's who he should probably try to be all the time.
Right, and that's the strength of his game, is his height, right? He's a slow starter. He's not explosive at the line of scrimmage. You don't see the, you know, incredible quickness coming in and out of routes. That's not what he is, but he is a big target, and he has to know how to use his physicality, and that's where he's lacking. And when, you know, listening to that gentleman say something about he's got to play angry, right? Well, the question that I always have is that something that you can teach a wide receiver? Is like, can you teach somebody, hey, you got to play angry, you got to play more aggressive, maybe more aggressive, right? And you can do it in certain ways, but you, or is it something that you just naturally possess? Like, you either have it or you don't have it. And from what I've seen so far, he just doesn't have that angry, like, violent factor. And that's what he has to be at the top of his route with his just stature and what he is. He's got to go in and be physical at the top of the route. He's got to use that big body and create separation that way, not by trying to be cute and, you know, pitter pat at the top of your route, because he's not going to beat people with quickness. But what he can do is out physical him. But again, it's a mentality. And is that something that he can be taught over an offseason? I don't know.
Does he remind you, Matt, does he remind you of anybody that you played with?
Right now, a guy that comes to mind is a kid named Jonathan Baldwin that we drafted out of Pittsburgh that for the Kansas City Chiefs. He was a late round pick in the first round. He came in, he struggled his first year. The first rookie year that we had with him, he actually went on IR because he got in a fight with Thomas Jones, which is another story for another time, but that was an outstanding fight. Nonetheless, he broke his thumb, was out, but then they tried to force him back in the lineup later in the season, and he just was never able to get going. But a very similar body type, right? Very big. He looked the part, physical, but not super explosive. He could jump, but didn't have top-end speed by any means. But again, John Baldwin was also a guy that stuck around the league for only a few years, was traded, and didn't really work out in – you know, it's just one of those situations where right now that's what he reminded me of. Just a guy that I've played with in a similar circumstance where you come in as a rookie, high expectations, want to have a contributor, misses part of the season, never really was able to get going.
When I sighed, that was because not that I thought Jonathan Baldwin was a disaster, but it's just, he was supposed to be so good. Right. And he looked, you know, if you got his football card, you go, whoa, this guy must be really good. It's funny with Harry because his aggressiveness is present, but it's more like peekaboo aggressiveness. It's a temper instead of a full-on angry condition. And I just think there must be so many people in his ear, from the footwork king to Tom Brady last year to Cam this year to Josh McDaniels to the media babbling at him to Bill. He probably just doesn't know who he wants to be or how he wants to be. I mean, he's a basketball player. He at one point was a little ambivalent about continuing to play in high school, and that's okay because of head injuries. It seems like and feels like he's a guy who just has to convince himself to play the way he is physically capable of and to play with that mean streak that is necessary that he can do, but he can only tap it for a few minutes. And when he taps it, he gets run over by a Dolphins defensive back, yet he is a walking offensive pass interference sometimes because he does get too aggressive. He's a walking penalty because he's trying to make something happen. It's maddening. Not maddening, but I honestly do feel bad for the guy. Check this. The Athletic, Shiel Kapadia, a good writer. They did a story on whether or not N'Keal Harry is a bust. Here's what Shiel wrote. From 2010 to 2019, 58 wideouts were taken on the top 50. Assuming Harry's current yards per game average continues throughout the final five games, this was a couple weeks ago, he'll have around 437 in his first two NFL seasons. That would rank 50th out of 58 wide receivers. So, yeah, it's bad. If we look at yards per game, it doesn't improve things. 19.9 yards per game, which would still rank 50th. I could go on with the stats, but I'm going to write a story on this later. You'll see him there. But I don't know. We don't need to beat this dead horse. But the last question I'll ask, Matt, is how often, as you were alluding to, does a guy change who he is as his career goes along?
Well, I just don't think he, in his defense, he's never gotten to a rhythm, right? He missed the first eight games. They already kind of were established at that point in the season. They tried to work him in with the jet sweeps. They tried to throw a few back shoulders. There was times last year later in the season that I actually thought that he was progressing in the right way. And then he came back this year. He had a decent first game against Miami. But then – you know, they kind of lost touch with how to use him and how to utilize
him. The game against Seattle too.
Yeah, exactly. Seattle was not a good game as well, but then he gets injured again, right? He's out a few weeks, and then Jacoby Myers steps up, so his role was diminished, and they haven't figured out how to use him. And because they're not using a lot of three wide receiver sets, so they're just substituting him in, and he can't get into really a rhythm of the game where you see like Damir Bird out there, he's catching balls, there's confidence there. Jacoby Myers is out there majority of the snaps, where he's kind of a guy that now is kind of getting into a rhythm of playing. Last week was probably the week where was it last week or the week against the Rams where he went up over the guy, made the great catch over him. That was the Rams. That's what I'm saying. So stuff like that is going to give him confidence going forward. And then also I think the system and the scheme and how they utilize him and give him more opportunities. He hasn't had a ton of opportunities this year, so he's got to get more opportunities. And then you can really evaluate him and say, okay, look, we've given him quite a few opportunities here. And I'm hope over these next few weeks, they get him in there and they still try to get him the ball and see what he can do with it.
Same. I think these next few weeks, you're going to try to win the game. You got to try to win. You know, do what you want to do to make sure that you're on top on the scoreboard at the end of the day, Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. But Tom, wouldn't it be nice to see him get a fair number of targets? Wouldn't it be nice to see Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene and just give him a shot. See if you can build any sort of positive momentum going into next year. I think that could be big for these guys.
And you're the one who was nose to the ground and figured out, hey, the Patriots always sold to Brandon LaFell on the first drive of the game back in 2014 just to get him ratcheted up. Found that, and I was like, well, yeah, you're right.
It was unbelievable. First play of the game, they always wanted to get him going. I think he was just that kind of guy. I think they knew we're good with Julian and like Amendola. Like, we can mix those guys in the third and fourth quarter when we need to win the game, but let's get Brandon going in case we need him to win the game late.
Quick side swipe on Tom Brady. Bruce Arians this week said, I don't know why anyone's criticizing Tom this week. What he did at the end of the half and to start the second half against Minnesota, Tampa Bay Buccaneers win this past Sunday, very, very few teams can score 17 points in a matter of 5 or 6 minutes. If we finish the first half with 17 points, I don't care how we start. He's not getting enough credit for what he's doing. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, Brady's got 30 touchdowns and 11 picks. He's taken 16 sacks. His team is 8-5. They've lost all their games against good teams. They've pounded average to bad teams. When you toss in the quarterback, the Green Bay win too. I'm trying to read in the G, we took a cue. When you toss in that Green Bay win too, you know, they've beaten a good team. So Brady makes enough throws in every game to show he is a top five arm talent, in my estimation, too, from 0 to 20 yards. And it looks the way you want it. But he's put himself in the crosshairs for criticism because of what he shepherded in down in Tampa Bay. It's less about Tom Brady's play that attracts the criticism and more about what he represents. True or false, boys?
I think it's true because obviously he left the Patriots and after 20 some odd years, he goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because obviously the weapons are there, right? And everybody thinks that because Tom Brady has all these weapons that he didn't have the year before and all that stuff, that they're just going to never – there's never going to be any hiccups. And obviously the focal point of him not being able to hit the deep passes with the weapons, why isn't what's going on with Tom, all these different issues, right? But they do have all the weapons, and Tom's played – really well, and he struggled at times with the deep ball, but he hit a 48 yarder to Scotty Miller. He hit Mike Evans on a nice deep ball as well. I mean, it's just the process of Tom Brady and who he is, the Hall of Fame quarterback, the best that ever played the position, that any type of mishap or miscue with any team, it's going to be under a microscope, and they're going to evaluate it and say, hey, you know, he's not the same guy, or he needs to do this, he needs to do that. And there's criticism there. And it's just the person that they want to attack. And it's not really his play, because like you said, how many teams around the NFL right now would be looking at 30 TDs, 11 interceptions, only 16 sacks. He's taking care of the ball. He understands the fundamentals of the game and be disappointed with that. Not a lot. I guarantee that.
Yeah, of course. And I think just the perception is too, though, that he's running the team. And that's why if they fail at all, it's going to come back on him. And in some respects, he kind of is. I mean, Rob Gronkowski's there because Tom Brady's there. Antonio Brown is there because Tom Brady's there. And so if they don't have success at the end of the day, people will always be able to point to the autonomy that Tom Brady has had to a certain extent. My contention throughout the course of this season has been that he actually should have more say. And this is where I may just have it wrong, Tom, but my contention has been, run your offense a little bit differently to accentuate what his skills are. You mentioned 0 to 20. He's still as good as they come. And I agree with that. Yet still they're throwing the ball down the field more often than anyone just about. I haven't looked at the stats the last couple of weeks, but he was right there neck and neck with Aaron Rodgers in terms of down the field attempts through like 12 weeks of the season. So, and they were both tied for number one. So like, that might be Brady though, right? That might be Tom Brady saying, are you kidding? Look at all these guys on the outside I have. And I could handle this. Yeah, Bruce, don't worry about it. Like, get out of my ear. We're going deep again. Like, so that might be on him. But to me, if you really went full Brady and you brought in the guys he wanted and you ran the offense that suited him better, you might get some even better results.
It's like he grew up on a par 70 classic Donald Ross course that had, tight fairways and penal greens, and you had to hit irons. Now he gets to hit driver, and even though he sprays a few, he's having a blast with the driver.
Just yeah, I play too much golf. Fly.
I've been there.
Last one, let's just ram right through it. Patriots Dolphins this weekend in South Florida. Who wins and why?
You know, it's an interesting matchup to me because the Miami Dolphins right now, they've got quite a few injuries, you know, and you look at it, you got Preston Williams, who's already out, right? But Jakeem Grant is questionable with the hamstring. You got Devontae Parker questionable with a hamstring. Mike Gesicki, his number one, like, tight end target, his security blanket, he's really questionable with a shoulder injury. You know, Eric Flowers, their guard. I mean, they've got a lot of injuries that they have to deal with. And it's interesting because you take those weapons away, particularly Devontae Adams, who's number one wide receiver, Mike Gesicki, who's his second leading wide receiver, tight end, whoever you want to, however you want to call it. They don't have a dominant run game by any means. This could be interesting because it could be a low scoring game. Offensively, though, they're going up against a defense that obviously creates a lot of turnovers. They're tops in the league and points being scored against them, turnover margin, third down defense, all those things. So we can talk about that, but they're not going to rely again on the pass game, right? They're going to run the ball. So if they can establish the run and do what they did in the first game and also get off the field on defense, this could be a lot closer. And I think that the Patriots are going to pull it out this week, boys.
How about that? Bill Belichick against a rookie quarterback. Can't fault you for taking the Patriots in that matchup. But I look at this and I look at this Dolphins defense in particular and just how aggressive they are and how well they disguise, because teams know they're aggressive, but there are plays that I've seen just looking back at the Chargers and Rams when we were getting ready for those games where it looks like they're bringing the house. It looks like it's blitz zero. And then all of a sudden they get six or seven guys into coverage and it can really screw with a quarterback. And so I think the Patriots are going to have a hard time scoring. I think the Patriots will do a good job on the other side, but I don't think they will do enough. So I have the Dolphins winning this 13-10.
Can I make one point there on that, though? They can do all that disguise, but it's really they can do that disguise when you're playing against a personnel group that's in 11 personnel with three wide receiver sets and then drop out. They do bring a lot of blitz zero and all that. But the thing that the Patriots offense does to defenses now, it simplifies it, right? You're in 21 personnel. They're going to have to be in base personnel. So there's not a ton of disguise. They can show you blitz and stuff, but you're going to know what you're getting in terms of the box. And if the corners are over in that slot formation, you know you're getting some form of man. So there's definitely formation things that you can do against the Miami Dolphins, especially because they're in such a simplistic offensive structure that is going to simplify what the Miami Dolphins do. Now, I'm not going to say that they're not going to stack the box and bring safety pressure and do all that. They're going to do that as well, but it's not going to be as dynamic as what they are against some of these other teams that like to line up in three wide receiver sets and spread the field out and where they can really create those disguises.
Hey, Castle, I'm not changing my prediction, okay? Fine. Stop trying to move me off.
Fine, I was just telling
Stop
you.
Stop trying. You can't get inside my head. It's 13-10. I locked
I'm
it
in your head. Let me out. I'm in your head.
16-15 Patriots. New England scores a defensive touchdown off a pick six. No, it was a strip sack fumble that was scooped up and run in by Josh Uche. So 16-15, Patriots win. Nothing but field goals aside from that for the two teams. 16-15, Patriots win.
I believe the Dolphins are favored in this game by 1.5 is what I saw last. Yeah. So, and I think the line is moving a little bit. So, and to Matt's point, if these guys don't end up playing, yeah, I think they were 2.5 point favorites earlier in the week. Now it's 1.5. Well, I think they're banged up. Matt just said they got some guys banged up.
Oh, I thought you were presaging a COVID situation. Guys, this is easily one of our best podcasts of the entire year. For those of you who made it past the 42-minute club, I appreciate you, but we gave you a good content too. Boy, there's a lot there. Tell a friend, will you? And to all the folks who I've met out there who say, hey, I listened to your podcast. Met a guy down in Rhode Island the other day. I was out there picking up some dip because they don't sell flavored dip here in Massachusetts anymore. And said, I was just listening to your podcast. Appreciate you. Appreciate all of you.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Flavored dip.
Real heartwarming story to end it on. Yeah, it's great.